can do this a couple of ways. I don't know if Commissioner Iaposi and Dr. Smith would like to discuss the budget, or if we wanted to go through some resolutions, and maybe if we had questions on the resolutions, they could discuss that as well if they wanted, if it was related maybe to the budget. So it's totally up to Dr. Smith and Commissioner Iaposi, however
that might go. I appreciate that, but I'm flexible, so I'll go with the majority opinion here. I'm fine.
Okay. Hey, Chairman Lopez, what do you think Legislator Bruno would prefer to not be present for?
Oh, here he is now.
Oh, wait, there he is. I don't have to make that decision.
All right.
Very good.
There he is. Hi, Al.
All righty. Well, you know what? Let's go through resolutions then. We'll start there, and then if anybody has any questions, either Dr. Smith or Mark or Commissioner Iaposi could potentially help out with those. So,
call the meeting to order and then do the minutes.
Let's call the meeting to order.
Okay.
And I ask for a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Very good. All right. We'll get right into resolutions then. We will start with resolution 330. It's amending the county budget to reflect public health preparedness funding for the enhanced detection grant of COVID-19. Move for discussion.
I'll move for discussion.
Second. All right. This is I believe that a federal pass-throughs.
Do you want me to quickly explain? So last month we asked you all to accept a contract through HRI, which was federal funding. And it was for enhanced COVID operations. The money that we accepted in that resolution last month is being used towards hiring a supervising health nurse and two public health nurses to focus just on solely on COVID operations. And we hope that this will allow us to come back off of our contract nurse grant. Contract that we're using currently. So
this will come off of the contract and they'll be employees of the County of Ulster?
Yeah, they won't necessarily be the same people, but if we hire these folks and get them trained up, we won't need to use as many contract nurses, which is more expensive in the short term than these public health nurses. Good. With benefits and everything and legacy costs, these might be greater, but these will sunset when the grant goes away. So they're 100% federally funded anyway.
This is the exact same thing we talked about the last time. Is that right, Mark?
Right.
Correct.
No, that's great, Mark. No, I appreciate that. I know there were a number of questions regarding, so. All right, is there any further discussion? All right, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Very good. All right, we will move on to resolution 331, amending the budget to accept a supplementary immunization action plan from the New York State DOH for flu activities. This is to expand the flu vaccine outreach and promote mass vaccinations. This is the 2021 flu season. Move for discussion.
I'll make that motion. Move for discussion.
Second that.
All right.
I got a question. This is strictly flu vaccine, correct?
Yes.
It's not the new fangled, whichever it's going to be, COVID vaccine.
No.
It is not.
I wish it was.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Dr. Smith, I don't know if you want to speak to Dr. Zucker's kind of initiatives and mandates towards you all for this funding.
Well, you know, certainly they want us, they had asked for our plan as to how we were going to move forward with support for getting the community on board with, you know, getting their flu vaccinations, et cetera, in light of the fact that with flu season coming upon us on top of the COVID situation, that we would potentially have an exponential worsening of the pandemic by virtue of the flu epidemic, which we would certainly want to make sure we control right from the get-go. And because of some of the difficulties, certainly in dissociating or differentiating between the very similar presentations of both of these infections with respect to symptoms and whatnot. So they did ask us for our plans, but certainly we're initially at least poised to start our usual public health education campaign to support this and to promote that moving forward. Now that the flu vaccine is so widely available at all the most of the pharmacies anyway, the push for us to be the sole provider of community vaccination has over the last few years waned because of the really widespread availability. So beyond that, I'm not sure I'm answering your question, Mark, but that's where the genesis of this is coming from.
At this point, it's still, the flu vaccine is still a voluntary vaccine. It's not mandated by the state.
Not yet, but there is the potential for that happening, knowing how they've been to date with respect to mandating the use of masks. Again, the issue certainly is enforcement when it comes to executive orders or mandates. So I'm not sure what that's going to look like, but they can certainly make a move to have that happen, and they may very well.
How would they enforce that type of mandate?
Very difficult, but right. Yeah. But you could enforce it in such ways as admission to school, basically, sure. Involving the making sure that folks have had the flu vaccination as part of the usual mandated vaccines like measles, mumps, rubella, and what other viral mm-hmm. issues. So, sure. That could certainly be one way to do it. You can mandate that healthcare workers, have it as well as they've been doing, mandating that they wear masks, et cetera, and that you literally have to have a medical reason why you can't do a flu vaccine or get a flu vaccine. There have been precedences for this type of thing happening for sure, and it may very well be in our future.
Right. It would be a little more difficult to enforce it. Like with the measles shot, the rubella, the mumps, you need that in order to go through the school system. As generally, it's, you get it once, a flu shot, on the other hand, you get every year. It's harder to track and enforce, especially.
And it's a 50-50 shot too. It's only a 50-50 right. shot if they pick the right vaccine for that year.
And I just want to clarify, Dr. Smith, you haven't heard through Dr. Zucker or anything that this is something imminently coming down the road. You're just speculating that this is something.
I'm speculating that it may very well be added to it, but I don't have definitive evidence for that yet. Right.
Was there talk of that, Doctor?
Yes, there has been discussion about it, yes.
All right. Well, we're good. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Let's see. We are...
3-3-2.
Yep. 3-52. Resolution 3-52. Approving the execution of a contract with People's Project.
3-3-2.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. 3-32. Authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a contract with the state DOH to continue the Children and Youth Special Home Care Needs Program. Move for discussion. Motion.
That motion.
And a second.
I'll second it. See, look, come on, anybody else on this committee?
Yeah. This program provides families with information and referrals to insurance and health services to address their identified special health care needs. If Mark, if you want to elaborate on that, or if Dr. Smith would like to as well, or if anybody has questions.
It has been an ongoing program of the Department of Health. It predated me in terms of its being housed in the department. Sue Jordan has been the person who has been solely really grant funded to do this work. It also works in conjunction with early intervention, which is under the auspices of DSS, and very often the two will be in communication with respect to referrals. But it's been an ongoing program of the department for certainly, like I said, at least 10 years that I know of.
So fully grant funded, correct, Dr. Smith?
Yeah.
So it's a grant funded and we're just renewing a contract. We're not creating a whole other one.
Yeah. It's a renewal.
We're accepting in the grant money. Right. Legislator Bruno, right.
Gotcha. This is just to allow us to take money in from TIC. That's a no-brainer.
Right. There you go. All right. Anything else? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Resolution 352, approving the execution of a contract with People's Project to empower and organize the psychiatrically labeled to work with the county high-risk mitigation team to provide support services for high risk substance users in Kingston.
I'll make a motion, move for discussion.
Yep, second on that.
I'll second.
I have a question. How is this being affected by Westchester Medical Center taking the services out of Kingston Hospital and County Benedictine Hospital?
So, I mean, this is, I'll say anything dealing with substance abuse or mental health beds are affected by that decision, right? But this is taking healing funds and putting it towards a high-risk mitigation team. I believe there's been a resolution in front of you in the past to do this. We did an RFP. Ellenville Regional Hospital administers this program outside of the city of Kingston, and this is adding in the city of Kingston to basically that program, and it'll be done by People Inc., who are partners with us in substance abuse and other areas too, to really provide this high-risk mitigation team, work with a handful of kind of the most high-risk population in substance abuse. I'm not sure if Tara has anything else to add.
I'm all for anything we can do to mitigate the, and I'll call it an epidemic in this case. It's actually a pandemic when it comes to substance abuse. My problem I have is at this point, given the stance that Westchester Medical Health Alliance has taken in Ulster County, I don't want to see any money go to them. Basically is what I'm saying. I don't mind helping out the people.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't mind helping the people who need it. And if it's going to Ellenville Hospital, great. But I don't want to see our money that should be going to residents that need it in our county getting funneled down to Westchester County or to Poughkeepsie so that they can do with it what they want.
No, this is going to People Inc. That's the
I don't
vendor.
Know who People Inc. is. That's why I'm asking you.
They're a nonprofit organization that deals in this world.
Do they have a brick and mortar building in Ulster County?
Tara, you're on mute.
Am I on mute?
No, you're good.
Okay. Mark. They have a building on Albany Avenue. They've had a brick and mortar building in the county for some time. They just recently went to this new larger space. And the hope is that the high-risk mitigation team will be able to buffer the loss if we do indeed suffer the loss of these beds, because it will be an intense following and support of these individuals struggling and challenged by the substance use disorder. But the monies, I don't believe, are going to Health Alliance of Westchester Medical Center.
No, they're not. And remember, PeopleLift specializes in the provision of peers. And the use of peers in substance use disorder care is what's considered an evidence-based initiative, basically. In fact, the behavioral health substance use disorder treatment programs basically are pretty much required to incorporate the use of peers, that's by OASIS, into their care plans and programs. So these peers then would be the individuals who would be the direct contact people to try to, for these folks that are, you know, known to be either, multiple overdoses in their history, or they are repeatedly utilizing services, emergency services, et cetera, because of their substance use disorder. But the peers are meant to engage them, so that hopefully they will be connected to treatment as opposed to falling through cracks and in that realm of treatment, because these are the most at-risk people for recidivism and going back and again using the substance and potentially overdosing. So that's really the point of this program, and to an attempt to focus it on the most at-risk substance users in the county.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. This we'll move on to resolution 3-3, approving the execution of the contract with Health Research for building local health department capacity funding. Move for discussion.
I'll make that motion.
There you go. A second?
Second it.
Do we have any discussion? This is it's 100% federal. Is this a reimbursement, or is this a pass through?
Dr. Smith or Kristen, I'll let one of you take.
It's a reimbursement.
It is a reimbursement. Yeah, I didn't see that in the abstract, so yeah, no, I appreciate it. Any discussion? All right, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Now, the next resolutions, we could probably block 354 through 375. These are all for foster care related services. I'm sure there's going to be questions on the contract. So yeah, if we block them together and then discuss as a block, maybe if anybody has any questions on each contract, we can go through that. Anybody be opposed?
Do you want a motion? I think that's a great idea. Yeah, I was going to bring it up. Do you want a motion for that?
Yes. A motion to block.
I move to block 354 to 375.
I'll second it.
Okay, and discussion on that, Bob?
Not necessarily on the resolutions.
This is just on the block. We still need to take the vote on the block.
Yeah, by OCC-ing.
Just to block them.
You're right.
Okay, so that was on. And a vote on the block? All in favor of the block?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. And then discussion on the resolutions.
I had a question.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So for several of the contracts, I saw a note at the bottom that they were appropriation dollars, but then there was also a small note saying that there was a split between state and federal and county. And so, Mark, could you explain how that works? The money split, I think it was like 35% for county and I can't remember the exact numbers.
It was.
I'll do, the balance I'll the do you one better. We got Pete Carney from DSS here. Okay. One of the one gentlemen behind the mask in the Mike Iaposi block. He's the fiscal manager for DSS, and I'll let him
okay.
answer that.
So my question was, some of the contracts had that, some didn't, I think. And I'm just trying to understand the difference between appropriation dollars and what's coming from the county.
These children are placed there, fall under different types of programs, which receive various types of reimbursement. So some of them are going to get a portion of federal, some of them get a portion of state, and there's going to be a county share depending on what eligibility these children fall under. I'm not sure if that helps.
So we don't really know what the county portion would be.
We do. We do.
Oh, okay.
We do. So all of the resolutions within this block are 35% county, 29% state, and 36% federal, all of them.
Right.
They are estimates. We're going on previous history because, as you said, we don't know the children that are going to be in care going forward. So that's a you know a ballpark estimate. It will fluctuate a little bit either way, but yes, that is correct.
Are we guaranteed the state and federal funds behind us, though?
At this point, are you talking now because of COVID or generally?
Yeah, because of COVID mainly. And are we going to get stuck with the hook for the 100% of this thing at the end of the day?
As of right now, there is nothing in the works for federal that I've heard of. The state, they are currently withholding 20%, but that's a withhold. They're not cutting at this time.
But so that our 35% could end up to 55%.
It could. These are mandated services by the state.
These are mandated services.
I guess what I was curious was seeing so many resolutions. There was no total number of what the county would be putting in, what the state would be putting in, what the feds, even if it's based on your estimated percentages. I was hoping to see like, here's the total chunk of change that's coming from the county.
Would be linked to actually our budget. They would show up in our different program areas in our budget. Now, obviously it doesn't link to each contract separately, but each program is in our budget.
What I also want to point out is these are not to exceed contracts, and it depends on, we don't know whether a child is going to be placed in a specific one of these contracts. These are estimates from a prior year or what we anticipate going into 2021, but we could have children that each of these provide slightly different services oftentimes and geographical locations. And so it depends on the children that we get out of foster care.
Right. So the contract, like, depending on the number of children, it could be less or it could be more. And generally, if it's more, then it comes back to committee, right, to that as an override or allowing and not to succeed.
Correct. It would come back to you. If we have to exceed it, period, we have to come back to
it. It always has to come back. Yeah.
But these amounts don't exceed the amount budgeted overall for foster care services.
I was also surprised to see so many providers. Like I had no idea that we use so many different providers from the county, and that the providers were a wide range, you know, north of Albany all the way south to Pennsylvania. So is that typical to have so many providers for this service?
It is typical, Peter, and a couple of the dynamics behind having this many providers under contract are that, and Mark alluded to this, we can't really predict at any one given time how many of the children we have in our care and custody might have to go into residential treatment centers. So some of the things that we have to contend with, we may be under contract with a facility that has no vacancies. So we want to have a large number of providers available to submit applications to based on the specific needs of each child and then what their vacancies are. And when we arrive at this point, sometimes depending upon what those underlying variables are, we may have to apply to 3, 4, 5, 6 facilities before we find a vacancy and a fit based on what their needs are. So that's why we have a large number. And from a liability point of view, we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where we are arrived at being directed to have a child go into residential treatment care where we're not able to make that arrangement because we don't have a contract in place. And I think it's also important and was alluded to earlier, in the event that we did have a situation where we exceeded the not to exceed, we would come back to the committee to make sure that that contract got amended for that facility.
Thank you. And I also want to thank you for your very thorough explanation of the question that I had at the last meeting. Thank you for sending that along.
Appreciate I got that in just under the wire. I couldn't believe that 2 months had elapsed. It's been a busy time for all of us, but that is one of our important positions here. And when you asked that question, I was actually just really encouraged to have the opportunity to provide you with that information because I think the data and the case examples demonstrate how important that work is. And it kind of directly relates to this block of contracts. If we can get services that are preventive into those households, into those children, they don't have to come into custody. They don't have to ever get placed. So that's why a program like that with an underlying contract, which is $75,000 or $100,000, if it can keep 25 to 30 kids out of placement a year, you can see how the numbers are more than justified. So I appreciate the question and you're welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Good. All right. Any other discussion? All right. On the resolutions, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Carried. Very good. We will go to resolution 376.
And
we
could block all of those, right?
Yeah. We could block the three. Sure.
Are there any differences between? I'll make the motion, and then in discussion we'll ask Deputy Executive Ryder. So I move to block 376 through 378.
Second that.
I'll second.
All right. On the block.
Yeah.
All in favor.
Well, just hold on. In discussion, can we hear from Deputy Executive Ryder if there are any differences in the contracts?
No, definitely. Yes.
They're generally the same. These are our preschool, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike. These are our preschool education transportation services. We go out to bid on these. And generally these are rates that are established by New York State, I believe, and so there should not be big differences between any of the contracts.
We're coming through loud and clear. I feel like I'm shouting at everybody. We don't want to be.
No, we're the area.
Okay, great. Yeah, Mark's absolutely correct about that. All of them are similar, so it's appropriate to consider blocking them. And as Mark explained, out to bid, they include agreed upon rates that are set. So there's nothing that I could really add to that explanation. Absolutely accurate.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, well, on the resolutions then?
I think we got to finish on the block.
I'm sorry?
We got to do the block first.
Oh,
we got to call the question on the block.
Yeah. All right. On the block. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And on the resolutions?
Aye.
All in favor? Aye. Very good. Okay, I think that is it on resolutions. Very good. So we'll go back to Dr. Smith and Commissioner Iapozzi. Want to get us an update and maybe take some questions regarding this year's budget?
We both have a member of the Carney family with us captive. So we can kind of flip a coin, Carol, if you want to, but I would defer to, you know, having you lead off if you'd like to.
Excuse me, Craig, somebody just joined us, 695.
2923. Could you please tell us who the caller is?
Okay.
Could you please state your name, phone number ending in 2923?
Hank Gross.
Hank Gross, thank you. Okay. I'm sorry, Craig.
Yep. Oh, well, did you guys decide who was going to go first? Is there a virtual rock, paper, scissors, or did you?
I think I'll defer to my captive, Carney. Kristen, do you want to give an overview of the budget? Or Mark, I don't know where to begin, maybe. That's my problem here. Is there a specific question about it that you'd like us to answer first and then get into the details, or?
Do you want to talk about any specific programs, Dr. Smith, initiatives, anything new in this budget?
Okay, well, a couple of the things that we already more or less discussed with the acceptance of grant money, certainly COVID's had us, as everyone knows here, had us extremely busy and engaged since March 10th on a marathon basis, really. But, what we've done is the COVID funding that we just accepted through this resolution basically is going to allow us to expand on our staffing so that we can continue the all-important contact tracing. Because right now, certainly one of the things that's delegated to us as a health department is contact or positive case investigation, which then leads to identification of contacts of that positive case. And then what we do is we've been very engaged with a brand new system that the state has really designed and developed, sort of building the plane as we fly it since March and April, which is known as ComCare. And that's a system in which the state has agreed to basically hire what's called virtual contact tracers to help all the various counties do this contact investigation piece, which can get very consuming because potentially people can have few or many, many contacts. So in any event, there is that process that we engage with. We have a staff member who's very much a part of the ComCare system, as are our nurses inputting information. But, the doing of the initial positive case investigation piece has really fallen to the health department, which has necessitated us to contract with nurses to supplement our own nurses who do this kind of work. Well, with the COVID-19 money that we're accepting here, we're going to be able to hire additional nurses, 100% COVID-19 funding supported, to help with this process. So we'll be less dependent on having to have the AccuCare nurses supplement our own staff. Hopefully these nurses who will be brought in through contract funding will be able to do that process. But the contact investigation, case investigation piece is very time consuming. You have to make calls. It's an actual outreach to these individuals. So in any event, that's part of what we, just resolved to accept. The other issue with respect to COVID itself has certainly created a heightened sense of anxiety in all of us, but it certainly has impacted folks with behavioral health issues as well. We've seen an uptick in the number of opioid overdoses, the number of suicides, violent behavior, homicides, as well as, we've seen fatal accidents. But the money that we accepted for the Healing Communities Grant, we have, various initiatives going on with respect to the opioid overdose issue, which COVID does contribute to, but we've had an issue now really escalating over several years. you know, in order to expand the mitigation team business and whatnot for supporting the work of the Healing Communities Grant and the two individuals who we've hired basically to support that work. But we were able now to expand on that because of that funding. Other issue of, let's see, what am I missing here? Kristen, help me out. Is there anything in it?
Mobile mental health expansion.
Mobile mental health expansion. Thank you. That's a big one. You know, the mobile mental health team has been in Ulster County now for a few years. The team itself is run by Access Supports for Living. It has, they regularly report to us on their usage. I think that data tells a tremendous story about the role that those folks fulfill in our community. They literally take the call of individuals in crisis, go out to the house or whatever to help to diffuse the situation if possible. If not, and the individual must go to the hospital, they can license social workers who are trained, make that determination. I think it's been a tremendous asset for the community. And one of the things that really was determined in their data patterns of usage is that the hours between 10 and 12 in the morning are really, the morning hours really are the highest usage periods. We, throughout the afternoon, the late morning, throughout the afternoon, with a bit right around the dinner hour, but essentially the later hours are not as heavily utilized. But in any event, those earlier hours, especially when it comes to schools needing the support of mobile mental health teams, you know, are important. So the added funding will help to put the team on duty from 10 to 12, whereas they now start at 12 on. So that's extremely important. And the having a trained social worker employed to literally, sit with in the 911 center so that when calls come in that are obviously related to behavioral health crises or issues, that support person can be right there and available, which hopefully will also help with the impact on law enforcement that some of these crisis calls definitely impose. So that's the other piece of this that's a part of our initiative. Kristen, anything else?
No, I think those are the main highlights of new initiatives.
I had a quick question about what you were just talking about with the mental health professional assisting with 911. Is that going to be one staff position? Is that one staff position or is that a couple? Because one person obviously can't cover, 24/7.
So it's for one staff person. The decision was made to start from looking at the data and trying to figure out the highest call volume between what the 911 center gets in now with regards to emotionally disturbed persons calls and the mobile mental health team. We decided to do from noon to 8 in the evening, one person doing that shift. And then if it does better, we can look at splitting it up and just really allowing the data to make those sorts of decisions.
Thank you.
Sure.
And any other questions for Dr. Smith?
I got a question.
Lynn Archer, sure. Bruno.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Hi. Al, you want to go ahead and I'll follow up?
Well, sure. My question's a little kind of off the wall, but Dr. Smith, with all the contact tracing and I've been, following COVID like we all have from the start, is there any data or is there anybody even compiling any data that the contact tracing and all the monies that are associated with doing that are actually preventing any spread or is there any kind of data that backs up doing all the contact tracing?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of data that we've been tracking as a county with a pretty rigorous database, and you know, it's all posted on the county website. So the whole story is there right from the very first days right till the present moment, where we track the positives, whether they're noted to be in the community or in a hospital setting or in a nursing home or in another congregate care setting, such as an OPWDD facility like ARC of Ulster Green, or you know, in the in any event, any of the congregate care settings. So we have all the data of all those numbers of positive tests. The answer to your question is a little bit more complicated, because as in some situations, it's tough to say whether an initiative will prevent something, and therefore you can base the data on what it potentially could prevent. I think the best way to explain that as a yes is to say that when you look at the fact that the state's been doing very active contact tracing and an attempt to control the spread, just look at those numbers, because whether it's on our website or the governor's website, or now the schools each have to have their own data presented on a daily basis on their websites, the fact that we're keeping those percentages low, like 1% or less, as a state actively engaged in aggressive contact investigation and isolating positives and quarantining contacts for 14 days, I think that speaks for itself. Whereas in those locales that were states that have not done it, you could look at the big shift, big evidence of those high percentages of spread in those locales that haven't had the same kind of active contact tracing and control systems employed. So I think those numbers speak for themselves, really, when you look at those percentages. So I, you know, what that's the best explanation, I think, because comparatively, New York has been doing much better than many states. When it started out, where we were a hot spot right in the very beginning of this pandemic. And, you know, the fact that we acted so aggressively as a state and nearby each of the counties, I think to reverse that tremendous peak and curve is really tells the story of, you know, that it works.
I guess my question, I appreciate, thank you, first of all. I guess my question was more of, the New York State and Ulster County has done a lot of different initiatives, a ton of different initiatives, from as simple as the masks and social distancing and closing, you know, places of congregation, whether it be work or others. There's been so many things that we've done as a group, including the contact tracing, but breaking it out. Like, I guess what I'm saying is that we spend a lot of money on contact tracing, and is it actually effective money? Or can that money be used maybe more on the social services for the people that are reacting, you know, with psychological disorders better than the contact tracers? You understand what I'm saying? There's so many things that you can't, it's hard to attribute it to one thing. And I guess that's what I was looking for, that the masks are doing, are saving this much more, or this much positives. You know, knowing that we have this many positives by the contact tracing, is that actually, what is that really doing for us? And I'm sorry if I'm carrying on, if it sounds like I'm going off, but I'm just, we do a lot. And I think New York has done a great job. I think the county has done a great job. I'm not saying anything bad. I'm just curious as of what parts of those things are really where it's
happening. Sometimes it's very difficult to separate the parts from the whole. And I think that's where we're looking at the whole as being represented by that low percentage of transmission in our area. And it's not just our county, it's our region, and they're looked at as a region, et cetera. And, you know, whenever there is an uptick in the number of in a particular area called a hotspot or whatever, we try to get even more aggressive about pursuing the pause complaints and trying to enforce the executive orders on wearing the mask, et cetera. So I think you'd really have to look at the picture as, you know, each of these parts plays a role. How you can separate out and then say, well, this part plays that, you, I think that's next to impossible, to be honest with you, out of, you know, just looking at the complexity of this and complexity of trying to track this pandemic virus that is brand new to the entire world. we don't really have the benefit of 2020 hindsight yet on this virus like we do with some of the other communicable viruses. But, you know, it's been a learning process right from day one and continues to be. The story is yet to reach its conclusion, certainly. I think we're in it for a longer haul than we even realize. But, you know, I think all together, when you look back, I think keeping that percentage 1% or less than that is a remarkable achievement, given the fact that it is so contagious and transmissible, that anything short of doing all of those things that we've done would have really resulted in an increase in the numbers, in my opinion.
I also think, if I could just add one thing to this, Craig and Al, I think we oftentimes, and I'm guilty of this probably in these committees, so this is where you're getting this idea, we speak loosely about contact tracing, and we group a lot of activities into what contact tracing actually is. We actually spend very little money on contact tracing as a county, because the contact tracers, the ones that are actually hired by the state and Bloomberg Philanthropies, and our volunteers on our end, they're the ones reaching out to the contacts. Now, contact tracing is larger than that. It's doing the case investigations, which is what our public health nurses are doing. It's making sure we get quarantine orders out. It's making sure we're monitoring the cases. In some aspects, it's testing individuals who we know have been in direct contact, or setting up testing centers. So that's where, like, our AccuCare contract has spent, we've spent the bulk of the money there, and it's really not so much contact tracing, but all those other pieces that I just kind of grouped in there. Sometimes I loosely say that they're doing contact tracing, when in reality they're doing, you know, 8 to 10 different activities.
All right. Well, thank you for I appreciate the answer.
Now, I think it was a good question, and I appreciate the answers and input from everybody. Are there any other questions for Dr. Smith?
Lynn Archer.
Yeah.
Oh, Lynch. Yep, sure.
Yep, thank you. I appreciate it. Just a couple of questions. I guess resolution 330 is approving the funding for the additional nurses that we previously approved for contract, but this is for hire, correct? And would this be the nurses that are in Division 221?
Yes.
And are they sunsetted? So, are they the positions that, should the funding go away? Because it is around contact tracing, around the epidemic. So if all of that gets resolved, these positions do go away. They are sunsetted?
Yes, correct? Which is why we created that specific division.
That's why I wanted, because it is separate and apart from the preparedness, but it is part of, correct?
Correct.
All right. I just needed the clarification. Thank you.
Did we need to put that in the resolution? Do we need to go back?
It should be. It should be in the resolution.
Is it in there?
It would be in the contract, no?
No, it should be in the resolution.
In the resolution.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks for the catch, Laura. I don't have a copy of the package, so I don't have the actual resolution.
I don't either.
I'm looking to see if we add on.
Can't find it.
Well, as we're looking for that, should we, were there any other questions for Dr. Smith?
I just had one question about the contact tracing. If somebody tests positive and they're in some sort of group home or whatever, the employees, if they've been in contact with them, obviously they can still go back and forth to work. Other than that, they're supposed to self-quarantine. I mean, are you tracing that? Because I'm being told one organization in particular has had several of their houses throughout the county have multiple positive tests for COVID. Yeah. People with developmental disabilities.
Yes. Yes, we are. I mean, the answer to that is yes. And are we concerned about that? almost as a super spreader type of a condition or an arrangement, yeah. Because of the disabilities of the individuals in the supported home, mm-hmm. and the fact that they do require, you know, that kind of care. So yeah, I mean, they are definitely are spotlighted right now by our department and the state health department as well. So we're definitely concerned about that. Yes.
If I may, I have one or two more follow-ups. One of the what would be helpful for me is in federal and state aid, we know we're anticipating cuts. I know there was a hold put on some of the funding. I just would like to understand how you approached funding, because I see some increases in federal funding, some increases, I think mostly in the federal side. Are those increases that you've already been notified that you will be receiving? I'm just trying to gauge, we still haven't gotten state cuts for 20. And so, you know, the impact of the potential state cuts, how did you move forward trying to right size your budget for 2021?
Kristen, you want
to talk about that? Well, we can't really we budgeted based on our current funding as it is. We can't anticipate cuts that we haven't been notified of, because if we anticipate cuts and then the cuts don't come, we've just taken away services for folks that could have been funded.
So, but you've increased some as well over last year or so over this year.
Right.
We haven't gotten any notification that federal aid, sorry.
I'd have to know what you're talking about. Like we got the two grants we just talked about from HRI for COVID. So yes, they're increases because they're brand new. We just got notified of them. So if there's a specific line, you know, but it's based on current awards that we have as of the preparation of the budget.
So along the lines of what you received last year, did you do any increasing, even if you haven't been notified of a cut for 2021?
We did not increase. All we did is budget what the current funding allocations are as of the preparation of the budget.
And did you see significant upticks in usage in all of your programs, or because, you know, you had a period of time where, you know, it was kind of closed down, but I'm sure your programs continued to some degree. So I didn't know if you saw any usage uptick or was it pretty stable compared to previous years? Just to get a flavor for how you approached that and what your experience was this year with COVID.
A lot of our programs are way down, correct, Kristen and Dr. Smith, because we weren't, I mean, everything shifted for about 5 months to COVID. So, you know, TB clinics and other activities where we would normally see people aren't out and about and doing that kind of thing. So I don't want to simplify it. Maybe Kristen and Dr. Smith, you can speak to it, but I think mostly we're down. But we didn't carry that into 2021 necessarily, because if something happens and there's a vaccine or whatever else, then we could be back to where we were pre-COVID.
But how does that impact funding levels? Does that impact funding levels? If you have less usage than you did in a given year?
No, it doesn't impact funding levels. On the Department of Health side, we get funded based on time tracking. Our staff track their day. So if staff weren't doing their normal work, they were doing COVID-related work. And COVID is also reimbursable under our state aid.
Would that be reimbursable under COVID, under FEMA, or is it reimbursable under the funding that was appropriated for that particular program?
Their regular salary is reimbursable under New York State Article 6 state aid. And any overtime is eligible to be reimbursed under the HRI COVID response grant we got.
So even though they were doing COVID for a particular program, it still counts, and the funding for that program would hold for a given for the next year.
Right.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it.
And interestingly enough, we actually have some grants where the grant allowed the folks working in the grant to do COVID and still claim it under the grant.
That's great. So you don't lose the funding level because experience was down this year because it was closed down.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So Kristen, 2210 IAP grant, that's one of the places where both our state aid and our federal aid is up.
Right. So that was the flu money.
Okay.
So to answer Legislator Archer's question, I don't see anything in that resolution about a sunset clause. Deputy County Executive Ryder explained that rather than contracting out services, it would actually be a savings to hire the three folks, but there is not a sunset clause in there, and there's no contract attached to it. There's a spreadsheet with costs, so I don't know if the committee
it should
wants
be
to
added to the resolution. And we have some language
in one drive.
Do you want to do that in Ways and Means, Lynn?
We could.
Because it was already passed. I mean, it's up
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, no, we can. We should add it, though. We're trying to do that for all resolutions going forward. Yeah. When there is funding goes away and the positions go away, we want to make sure we're able to track those. So that's part of how we'll do that going forward. But yes, we can do it in Ways and Means.
I mean, this resolution itself is amending the 2020 budget specifically. But I understand where you're coming from, and it is why we separated it into its own division.
Well, and it's in the budget. The three positions are in the budget for 2021, and I just asterisked those. So we'll make sure we have that going forward. Thanks.
I apologize for that. That's my error. I'll own that.
That's okay. Well, we'll make sure it gets fixed. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd much rather see it go to
You broke up a little bit.
I'm broken. I just rather would see money go to Ulster County positions than contracted. Just would. So thank you.
Hey, does anybody have anything else for Dr. Smith? Okay, if not, then we will move on to Commissioner Iaposi.
Thank you, Dr. Smith and Kristen and Tara. You're welcome to stay, but I don't think it's
necessary. Oh, yeah, no, we don't have to keep you here if you want to scoot out.
This is going to be totally riveting. This is going to be really riveting, so you might want to stay.
You don't need some moral support there, Mike?
I won't take it personally.
Great presentation,
by the way. We have a lot of things in common in terms of our departments and the dynamics around how we operate. So
absolutely. That's one of the things that I really appreciate very much about my position is the support we get from you folks. So thank you.
Yeah. No, just an excellent group of staff. Great job.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Thank you, Dr.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Smith and team.
So I'll just make a few very brief remarks, being mindful of the time. I know that I just said very similarly to the Department of Health and Mental Health, we operate as a department that has a lot of similar dynamics in connection with carrying out our duties and responsibilities. And I'm very encouraged to report that I think we arrived at navigating 2020 and preparing for 2021 in a very similar fashion in terms of being able to do some incredibly responsive evaluation based on what we were seeing with our activities and our caseloads and our referrals and our applications to kind of react in real time to what we could do during 2020 and then preparing for 2021. And I think a really vital point that was brought up by Kristen and Dr. Smith and Mark was that And in terms of making preparations and arriving at estimates and looking at trends, the challenge that we face is taking into consideration what we've experienced over the last 7 months in terms of what the demands on our department has been under unprecedented circumstances, with the real possibility that we're going to return to the volume of activity that we had previously at some point in 2021. And I think Kristen made the point that our funding streams rely significantly on the amount of services we're providing. So there's not necessarily a limit there. I also just want to just very quickly recognize that we have tremendous staff here, a really great infrastructure. Our longevity around preparing these budgets and working with the finance department and the executive's office and all of you over the years really laid down a foundation and infrastructure for us to be able to meet these challenges. And given the size and scope of our department, we're nearly a third of the county budget with almost a third of the county workforce. So there's a lot of people doing a lot of activities here. And I just want to make sure that I take a moment to recognize all of their effort and their commitment to the work that they're doing, because it's, again, really vitally important. And the collaboration that takes place between finance and the executive's office and the other departments and us, you know, we could not have arrived at accomplishing what we have over the course of this year without that being in place. So we always basically kind of break down our budget into a few major areas. We obviously have staffing because we have a large number of employees. Again, just about all of our positions capture revenue streams and reimbursement from either the state or federal government with a county share. So we're always very mindful of that. The job duties and responsibilities that we have for the positions that we have are guided by that. So those are the principles behind which we arrive at trying to manage staff, because staff is going to be what drives our ability to meet the demands in terms of programs. The next point I would make is around federal and state reimbursement. A lot of the same similar challenges that Dr. Smith and Kristen talked about with respect to right now, you know, we have not seen any specific indications around any changes that are going to take place with regard to our federal funding. So like Kristen mentioned, we here do the same thing, and Pete does this not because Kristen is his wife, but he does it because it's a sound fiscal practice that we want to continue to include in our budget what our expenditures might be so that we can capture the funding stream that's going to be available. We don't want to arrive at not following the same trends that we would normally follow. And we have to kind of treat these last 7 months, again, as unprecedented. And how do we arrive at managing going forward in anticipation of increases? Because similarly, we have had some changes that took place in our program because of the stabilization in some regards that COVID brought to the community at large. So we're always looking at federal reimbursement, state reimbursement. We previously reported in a connection with a question that I think was posed around some of our resolutions that we have been notified by the state that they are doing a 20% withholding. We're going to be monitoring that very closely to be able to arrive at being prepared for the impact of that. But you know, reimbursements are significant. We probably, in our 2021 budget, over half of it is driven by revenue streams and reimbursements. Programmatically, I just want to mention, basically, the Medicaid program lives in the Department of Social Services, is what I'd like to say. And obviously, it provides programmatically health insurance to a large number of Ulster County residents. The history behind the Medicaid program is that we don't receive reimbursement for it. We actually, the state pays for the program, and we make a contribution that is capped. And the current cap during 2021 was approximately $33 million. So that's our contribution to the Medicaid program. But just to give you some context, probably the Medicaid program brings into Ulster County about $475 million. So of that $475 million expended in Ulster County by Medicaid, we contribute $33 million. And that's paid for in shares biweekly. So we've budgeted that for 2021. There was a lot of talk at the beginning of 2020 about the possibility of the cap being adjusted, but with the advent of COVID, there weren't any further discussions about that, and our expectations is the cap is going to remain intact. But that is a big portion of what our expenditures are. But at a time like this, in a state where we live, where health insurance is encouraged for everyone to be able to have an access for health insurance, it's definitely important and has been very important over the course of this time and will continue to be important going forward. Early intervention in preschool. This is interesting because it sort of addresses a question that Lynn asked about. This is a program where we actually did budget for an increase over our 2020 budget. And the reason for that is based on what the state set rates are and the trends that we've seen in terms of the volume of cases. So in order to be fiscally responsible and taking into consideration what we've seen unfold, we did budget an increase there. And that's just something that we would do in the normal course of business. So we wanted to be transparent about that. And we would support that with the data we have, again, going into that program and looking at the volume of cases and the rates. And the rates are set by the state and the program is mandated. So there's not a lot of flexibility with something of that nature. Our economic support programs capture a lot of different public assistance programs, including SNAP, which is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Also our emergency homeless and shelter benefits, our child care subsidy. We've unexpectedly in some ways seen a lot of stabilization across the spectrum of those programs with the caseloads, and a lot of that has been attributable to the fact that just like the entire rest of the population, people have been able to remain where they are. We captured in terms of opportunities around our caseload, being able to have the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance arrive at some waivers and recertification extensions. So with regard to those kinds of cases, things have been pretty stable, fortunately. One area I want to emphasize, though, is we have had a lot of applications, particularly around the SNAP program, that didn't end up generally resulting in an increase in cases because there was other dynamics involved, like the federal economic stimulus, the enhanced unemployment benefit. We had Project Resilience here in Ulster County that helped a lot of residents. So these were factors that although we had upticks resulting in twice as many applications as we normally would experience in a month, we didn't see the case load actually increase. But there was still a lot of work to be done in connection with those. Child and family services would be the last area of activity that I would mention. And there again, you know, pre-COVID, we had about 175 children in foster care, which are children that come into our care and custody. We were providing preventive services to about 220 children. Because of the fact that those placements were arrived at, and the preventive services were also approved, they remained relatively stable throughout COVID. We didn't see any significant increases or decreases there. We still continued to provide those services. We did it differently, just like we're doing this meeting differently, but we did it effectively. One area that we did see a decrease was in terms of Child Protective Services investigations. They did start to go down dramatically in March, April, May, June. We attributed that to the fact that the school closed and a lot of children's activities were suspended. So adults who are mandated reporters who would have generally been interacting with children, their interaction dropped dramatically. So we did have decreases from probably an average of about 250 investigations a month to about 145. Starting in July, August, and now in September, we've seen that come back up to about 200 investigations per month. So it's starting to uptick back to where it was. Schools are reopening. Other activities are being resumed. So I think that's something, again, that we watch and monitor closely. And we want to be prepared going into 2021 to meet the demands associated with that. So that would be, you know, just the summary of what drives the decisions around arriving at our budget and what the programs are and the dynamics behind it. So myself and Pete are available for any questions that you might have.
Thanks, Mike. Are there any questions from the committee?
I just had a quick question. Were there any new state mandates that that you're having to accommodate?
There's nothing that's arrived at that's been new. I mean, a couple of the more recent ones have been around Code Blue, which is a mandate for us to be able to provide shelter to anybody in our community when the temperature is at 32 degrees or lower. Raise the age mandates, Peter, are another one, and that's with regard to 16 and 17 year olds. There hasn't been anything new arrived at though.
What percentage of your budget is actually state mandated? Or just mandated in general? Significant, right?
I don't have that number, but it would be a large portion. Just right. on the Medicaid alone is $33 million out of 117.
Right.
And early intervention, preschool is another 19.5. I would venture to guess that probably over 100 million when you start to get down to the details.
I was just going to say about 80%, Mike, at least plus.
Yeah, that's a state estimate.
Two thirds or more. Yeah. Wow. Are there any other questions?
Yeah. You'll have to forgive me if I'm mixing up different conversations, but there is a significant, so within the Department of Social Services, there's significant savings going into this budget. That's where the county was able to find, have been able to balance the budget going forward. That's correct, right? It was social services.
Well, being the largest department and about a third of our budget, that there was a considerable amount of savings. They did see a large amount of the retirement incentive was in the Department of Social Services.
So does this, because those were county employees, does this put and speaking of, you know, kind of build on the previous question, would it be fair to say that there's now a larger proportion of social services services, like our services that are being provided, whether mandated or not, that are now falling on some of the vendors that we work with rather than on county employees, since it doesn't proportionately mean that we're now more reliant on vendors?
No, I wouldn't say that that's how I would characterize that, Abe. I would say that a couple of other dynamics around our staffing that are important to keep in mind. Mark alluded to the fact that we have captured savings for the benefit of the county with regard to people electing the retirement incentive option. So we are having a number of positions defunded. But to the degree that as a large department, given the number of our staff, we generally were around an 8 to 10% vacancy rate traditionally over the course of the last several years. And this is not unusual given the number of staff that we have. So with the impact of the staff having retired, we're going to definitely keep that vacancy rate lower. So we're going to try to make sure that we have all of our positions staffed. And we have very closely monitored the volume of our cases. So in as much as we're prepared going into 2021 for what we anticipate to be our ongoing workload, I don't see that we're going to be arriving at the expectation. And for mandated services, quite frankly, we can't pass those off to service providers or vendors to do. We have the legal obligation to provide those services. We also, with respect to some of the contracts we have with service providers to assist us, have reduced some of those contracts. But it's all been, I can honestly tell you, all very thoughtfully done with very careful consideration of where our caseloads are and what our ability is going to be to manage those caseloads, remaining fully staffed with the number of staff that we do have in our budget. So, you know, I can sit here right now after a lot of effort being expended by the staff here, finance, the executive's office. I'm confident that we can continue to meet our mandated obligations.
And Mike brought up in his kind of presentation, he talked about some waivers and other things that OTDA has put out, some of which is like a face-to-face interview requirement for anything. So now staff are able to do these things on Zoom. And it's honestly made it a lot more efficient. And we don't anticipate those waivers of those requirements going away anytime, especially in 2021. But quite frankly, I don't see OTDA going back to the way things were pre-COVID ever.
Yeah, and I think, Mark, just to expand on that, I kind of mentioned them quickly as basically eligibility waivers and recertification extensions. So OTDA has arrived at implementing those during 2020. They also implemented an online application process, which was already in their pipeline pre-COVID. So very consistent with Mark said, I think we're prepared to realize better efficiencies with regard to processing some of the work that we do. So I think that's going to allow us to be able to arrive at handling the impact of the reduced staffing, particularly with a lot of our economic support programs and the application recertification and eligibility determination process. One example is we used to previously have to do face-to-face interviews. We no longer have to do that. And that has been a waiver that has been arrived at, currently implemented, and the expectation is that it's going to remain in place for 2021.
So I appreciate that. And I absolutely recognize, you know, the immense effort that's gone into making this work and you know, getting us to a place with the budget and staffing levels that we need to be. You know, my concern, and I'm sure that this is a concern that you share as well, is just that with some of the unexpected things that the contingencies that we might need to plan for when it comes to funding sources, some of those funding sources, whether it's from the state or from the federal government, were they not to come through, wouldn't just hit us. They would also hit some of the other agents, some of the you know, vendors that we work with for some of the other contracts. So we might end up not only having a budget crunch on our sources of funding, but also we could even be in a situation where we have an inability of a vendor to fulfill a contract because they're no longer able to stay afloat because of other general operating funds that they're not receiving. And I just, I'm sure that you're thinking about those, externalities and contingencies, and you know, I appreciate that, and it's something that I also am, you know, weighs heavily on me.
Understand, and thank you. I mean, it's a very valid point, and again, a lot of the service providers that we engage with and collaborate and have contracts have other revenue sources that come into their organizations either directly from other clients or from other government sources. So I think we're all going to be making adjustments, and we're going to continue to have very close conversations and monitor what we're seeing. But yeah, certainly are aware of that and appreciate your recognition of it.
Thank you.
All righty. Do we have anything else?
Just one quick one, Craig, if I may. Thank you. The COVID has really kind of forced us all to look at how we operate and do things differently. I'm happy to hear that some of those things have been beneficial to your group in allowing you to do Zoom online services. I guess my biggest concern is, and we don't know, is if the state starts to say that you can no longer do that anymore. So, you know, whatever efforts we can do to help support and push the state to really think about these, because this is really about efficiencies, right? And still being able to deliver mandated programs in a different way. So I think we could say that across government, this has opened our eyes to a lot of different things. But if there's anything that happens in the year and we can help in any way, let us know, because I think we need to start looking at how we do business in a very different way. So the work that you're doing here. It's appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. And I mean, I think part of the ongoing challenge, one of the reasons, and Dr. Smith started to allude to this, I think when Al asked the question about contact tracing that Mark eventually expanded on, is that, you know, we've seen things unfold in sort of a way that has required us to respond to these unexpected circumstances, you know, as reasonably as possible, you know, in order to keep people safe, in order to continue to provide services. And from the human services perspective, one of the challenges, we want to still sustain the human beings in the human services process. And we have to be really thoughtful and really careful to continue to be able to do that safely and securely. And part of what I think Ulster County has done in an incredibly successful way around workforce reallocation and redeployment, not so much workforce reduction. Yes, there has been a reduction, but we here at Department of Social Services, given the number of people, we remained open during the entire COVID pandemic. We're essential services, so we never closed, but we were able, working with other county departments under the guidance of the executive and finance and IS, to deploy a lot of people remotely who have been able to work effectively. I think that's also kept us as a staff and our clients safe. And that's why we've been at that 1% rate, which is almost miraculous when you consider the number of people that are circulating and transactions that take place. But there is definitely momentum about being able to reconnect and bring people back in touch. And especially I emphasize it in the context of our vulnerable populations of children and adults, that not as much as it's not possible for those individuals and families to be transacting conversations electronically like we are, but, you know, being there and seeing for ourselves and being in touch. I mean, I think the Project Resilience food delivery, that contact of physically delivering the food was so meaningful to so many people who otherwise felt isolated. And so many of our vulnerable clients are dealing with really significant issues around mental illness, mental health, substance abuse, trauma, and the trying to, you know, keep intact or restore some contact, but we're trying to do that very thoughtfully. So appreciate your observation and support around trying to strike that balance.
Okay. Do we have anything else? Any other questions? Anybody want to share thoughts, comments? Okay, well, very good. Thank you so much, Commissioner Iaposi. You know, you always do an incredible job. Yeah, you did. Over the past number of years, I always appreciate you coming in and sharing the budget with us and taking our questions. So thanks so much.
Always available, Chairman. And I do enjoy it. So anytime that you want to hear from us here, we're here. Thank you so much for the invitation. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Very good. Is there anything else that anybody wants to bring before the committee?
I'd like to make a motion we adjourn.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Very good. Thank you, everyone. Stay safe. Be well.